Stupid, eh? Are you a stupid fool? Well, why can't you drive then? You can't even drive! Bit grey today, isn't it?
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to The Deepest Law. I'm here. I've just watching my own video, basically downed a mug of Nescafe Gold. So I'm even more fired up than I was already. How you doing, Pharaoh?
Yes, very good. Thank you very much.
And one of the things I thought I'd mention just at the start here is that that intro music that everybody loves so much, the funky music, as I've mentioned before, was the theme music of Dory Funk Jr. and Terry Funk in Japan. And there was some sad news in the wrestling world a couple of days ago that Terry Funk has dementia. So I just wanted to say publicly somewhere that my thoughts go out to Terry Funk, an absolute legend in the world of wrestling, a man who is so pure to the world of pro wrestling that if you cut his veins, his blood would just be like wrestling itself. So yeah, I love Terry Funk. I love the Funk Brothers. So I just thought I'd mention that. But anyway, how are you doing, Pharaoh?
Yes, really good. I mean, speaking of wrestling, I loved your kind of localism video wrapped up in wrestling. You know, obviously, this entire channel is a vector to kind of push your wrestling knowledge ultimately. It's not really about economics. It's just about the wrestling. But it was a great video.
I actually bought two massive books about guilds in the medieval era, which are meant to be like the definitive beatdown on the idea that guilds could have any positive social utility. At some point, I mean, I've got so many things I want to do. In fact, Pharaoh, I've become so busy that I've been considering taking on some apprentices, like a Sith Lord. What do you reckon?
You should, yeah, definitely put it out there. Get an intern. Just imagine you could be mixing the Nescafe Gold every morning for AA. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking more than an intern, more like an actual apprentice who I would train up to like replicate myself. And, you know, eventually they could kill me, I guess.
You need to have it as, you need to run it like some kind of game show, you know, sift through the competition. You have to follow through the hoops. Who makes the best coffee?
I don't want them just making coffee. I want them like researching, you know. I'd like, in my ideal world, I'd be like, right, I want you to go over there, get me every time, like, I don't know, go through these six volumes of Carlyle, pull me out every time he talks about Bobus Higgins. Because you know Thomas Sowell, one of the reasons he's written 40 books is that he has like two assistants, basically, who do most of his research for him.
Probably saves a lot of time, yeah, isn't it? So.
I mean, one of the things that really slows me down, because people are like, oh, well, you know, when's this coming? When's that coming? I've only got so many hours in the day. And the longest time isn't actually doing streams like this or even making videos. It's the research.
Mm. Yeah.
It's the research is the thing that slows you down. I've been considering, you know, taking on, possibly even paying them, you know, but we'll see.
If you're worthy, if you're a 10 in the making, please make yourself known to AA and he may anoint you as his apprentice.
Yeah, but I want them to want to become like a scholar. I'll train them in the ways of the Sith. All right, shall we make a start, because we've got quite a lot to get through here. We are going to be having a look at a debate that took place in 2010, I want to say it happened, between Christopher Hitchens the lesser of the two Hitchens brothers, of course, mm-hmm. and the Dark Lord himself. Is religion a force for good in the world? And this is quite unusual, isn't it? Because the Dark Lord is on the side of religion, and Christopher Hitchens obviously is on the side of the atheists. So this is kind of interesting, because I'd imagine most of the audience would ostensibly be on Blair's side here. But we are going to be breaking this down. I'm going to be looking for rhetorical strategies, actual logic and actual argumentation. I'm going to be looking for frame games, persuasion games, and so on. What are you going to be looking for in this debate review, Pharaoh?
Yeah, because I guess the whole kind of concept of this stream is to kind of look and see what's their rhetorical game like. And I think just stepping back a second, what Blair does so well is that he's constantly dropping his poison, but it's all kind of it's all sugar-coated constantly. And he speaks with authority. And like you said in the past, the reason why people love him so much is that he feels like a dependable and a trustworthy individual. And I think it's worth analysing and breaking down why is that. I think I'll be looking for some of the body language, some of those messages. Again, trying mm-hmm. to like what are those overarching messages that he keeps seeding in? And like you said, some of those other little tips and tricks. But obviously, they're both very seasoned debaters. One thing I would say is that obviously it's not that surprising that Tony Blair is religious. He just prays to Satan rather than to God. So,
didn't he wait until he was out of office to be before like declaring himself a Catholic?
It's interesting. I don't want to malign my Catholic brothers out there, but obviously him, Biden, Boris,
Pelosi. Boris is Catholic, is he?
He had a Catholic wedding, didn't he? With Carrie. So he's technically, I think, the first Catholic prime minister.
Yeah, I mean, the Pope. Hello. somebody was explaining actually on Twitter the other day that there's actually been like a schism within both the Catholic Church and the Protestant churches for some time, and that even though the progressives or the what did he call them, compromisers, the people who are basically trying to make peace with liberalism have been in formal power, they've actually been losing that progressively over time, because the vanguard, the conservative vanguard, and in both Protestant, in the Protestants are called evangelicals, and the I can't remember what the Catholic vanguard call themselves, but I mean, apparently he was saying that John Paul II was one of these vanguards, that which surprises me, because I always thought
John Paul's a good lad. He did some great work in Poland against the communists, for example, and his university. That's why he's universally loved there. I think a very decent Pope. It's the same thing in the Church of England in Synod. There's a war going on between the progressives and the evangelicals, but just because of attrition, ultimately the evangelicals do seem to be winning. But it's an interesting battle that's going on.
Yeah, if I ever get any bloody time, Pharaoh, I was hoping to do a couple of little research trips. I want to go to an Orthodox church that I've spotted about 10 miles away from here. In fact, it's one of the original Orthodox churches in the country. Parts of the service are still in Russian. I also want to go. There's this Society of Pius the Ninth, I think it is, or Pius the Tenth or something. And they've got a church in Woking, somebody told me. And I want to go there as well. I want to see, like, is there such a thing as like a base church? There's also a hardcore like Calvinist Methodist church not too far away from here either. And I would love to just go and attend a couple of services to compare baseness levels with the disgusting Catholic church I went to for a couple of months a while back.
Yeah, this is the problem with it. People call it church shopping. When you're church shopping, you can go to three different churches and they'll have totally different theological and political beliefs. So I would never go to a church unless I'd been recommended it by a friend of mine, typically. But you should definitely go. One thing on the Orthodox, I don't know whether it's the same in the UK, but in Russia they have some of the coolest weddings because I think they get to wear crowns. So I thought that's mm-hmm. pretty sweet. That's what we don't have.
Yeah, I mean, I've been somebody saying like going to church for baseness is still the wrong reason to go. Old turnip in the chat there. I can see that. And as I've been reading around more and more, you know, I've been reading a lot of Carlyle recently because I've been steeped in, you know, I made that video last night, and I'm preparing a much longer Carlyle kind of guide. And he had some pretty interesting comments. Like, you know, nobody would read Carlyle and say, well, this is not a religious man. He's obviously like deeply spiritually religious man. But
yes, yes.
Let me read you some comments that he made about God before we watch this debate.
Yeah, sure. Just while that's happening, I can tell some pretty cringe stories of various church visits. This one church which I went to, this was not from a recommendation. I had it was at the end of the street, and the vicar made us all stand up halfway through the service and spin around like whirling dervishes, you know, the Sufi sect. And it was one of the weirdest slash cringiest experiences I've ever had in my life. So a good church can make quite a difference, I think. So
here's what Carlyle had to say about God, okay? Thomas Carlyle argued throughout his life that knowledge of the divine will is essential to individual well-being, to social justice, and to heroic action. Yet he resisted labels applied to his own beliefs and all attempts to define God in words. Carlyle thought that scientists and theologians alike had disrespected the essential mystery of God by presuming to define the workings of the universe or the nature of deity. Carlyle did not engage in a lifelong search to find or debate, to find or define God. Early on, he found within himself an innate desire to worship, an equally strong tendency to recognize the object of that desire as essentially mysterious. From an early age, Carlyle rejected the God-made flesh of Christianity. At the age of 15, he asked his devout mother pointedly, "Did God Almighty come down and make wheelbarrows in a shop?" At the age of 80, he maintained the same response to Orthodox Christianity. "I do not in the least believe that God came down upon earth and was a joiner and made chairs and hog troughs, or came down at any time more than he comes down now into the soul of every devout man. There is no use in saying anything more in the matter. Let it rest here." So it's kind of interesting to me that he, you know, he was like devout. If you read, I mean, nobody can read any Carlyle and doubt that he had like a very strong belief in the divine order of things. And yet he stubbornly resisted any one doctrine, which is how he can have Cromwell and people like John Knox as heroes, and also like Dante as a hero, for example, or Muhammad as a hero, because he refused doctrine. So I guess that is the perennial traditionalist. You know, Dick Evelyn's similar in that he refuses to, you know, commit to any one. What would you have to say to all of that, Pharaoh?
Well, it sounds very universalist to me. I can see why, and again, like, because he's had like physical experiences as well, and he had like a walk in nature, and kind of felt that, you know, I'm sure the theological debaters would have much more to say about it, but I think it plays an interesting point, which is people see the debate as religious or non-religious. But I think there's many more complicated views than that in between. So,
yeah, and the final note on the Carlyle. He was described many times in his own life as a Calvinist without the theology, or a Calvinist without the Christianity, which is kind of an accurate description, I would say. All right, now we're probably not going to get through all 1 hour and 46 minutes of this. We'll just get as far as we can, and given how much me and you talk and pause things, Pharaoh, you know, 20 minutes will be optimistic. So let's get going.
Former British Prime Minister Tony Blair and author Christopher Hitchens next, debating the social effects of religion. Held in Toronto, this is just under 2 hours.
Welcome to Toronto, Canada, for the Monk Debate on Religion in association with the BBC and Intelligence Squared. I'm Rudyard Griffiths, and it's my privilege to be your moderator tonight. I want to begin by welcoming the worldwide audience of the British Broadcasting Corporation.
Should we get past all of this nonsense here?
Sure.
As much as I'd love to hear this Canadian
When did Hitchens die?
When did Christopher Hitchens die? That's a good point. Christopher Hitchens, of course, Dark Lord will never die. He is immortal. 2011, so this was a year before his death. And in fact, I do think that these debates that went on throughout the 2000s and the early 10s were significant. I saw somebody post a graph showing that Gen Z, or Gen Z as they're called, has the lowest religiosity of any generation in history, basically. And the graph was really stark, actually. The gap between Gen X and Gen Z, I mean, they're even less religious than the millennials. I think it was like less than 25% of Gen Zers would say they had a belief in God that was without doubt, basically, which is down from like 70% in the silent generation. Mm. So yeah, it's a pretty dire situation when it comes to religiosity among Western Zoomers. So let's carry on.
Can we just pause a second?
Go on.
Sorry, just already noticed the body language of the two. You've had Blair come out like a victorious champion. He's smiling. Just look at that dirty look from Hitchens. He's skulking over his lectern like some kind of goblin creature. Yeah, it's interesting seeing.
You could say, though, that he's got his game face on, whereas Blair's just kind of taking this as just yet another engagement maybe as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can tell one of them was a politician and the other one was not.
Tony Blair was the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom from 1997 to 2007. Among his many international roles today, he is the Quartet representative in the Middle East, working with the UN, the US, Russia, and the EU to try...
Fucking hell. Let's carry on.
...trying to secure a lasting peace in the region. After leaving politics, Mr. Blair converted to Catholicism, and he launched the Tony Blair Faith Foundation, a global initiative to promote respect and understanding among the world's major religions. Many of us...
Can I just say that kind of united global religion thing is a very dark op. You see it every once in a while where all of the heads of the religions come together in the Vatican. Quite a dark thing that goes on.
Was that one of the ones you found in that NGO stream?
No, I didn't come across it. In fact, I came across it I was watching a bit of Jay Dyer, and he was talking about how this has been like a decades long project to bring together the religions of the world, and they all meet in the Vatican like once a year. It's just interesting to see the Dark Lord here involved in that initiative as well. You know, yet another pie he has his finger in.
In this room have read his recent best-selling memoir, A Journey, My Political Life. Christopher Hitchens is a British-born American author, journalist, and atheist. His regular Vanity Fair column, his prolific speeches and essays are central reading for anyone and everyone concerned about global affairs. Christopher has a number of best-selling books, too. Obviously, God is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything, and his recently published memoir,
Hitch
22. Christopher was...
Just noticed, did you see his feet tapping? He just hates the shill. He wants to get on. He's ready for the fight.
Yeah.
Blair's loving it. Blair's like, buy the book.
recently diagnosed with esophageal cancer, and as such, we are doubly grateful that he and his family have joined us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, your debaters. Before getting our debate underway, let me just briefly run down how the next hour and a half will unfold. Each debater has been given 7 minutes for their opening remarks for and against the motion. Next, Mr. Hitchens and Mr. Blair will confront each other head on, so to speak, through two rounds of formal rebuttals. We'll then bring you, the audience, into this debate through written questions. All of you received a written question card. At any time in the debate, fill that out, pass it down the aisle for collection. I'll also be taking some questions from audience members on the stage, some of the younger audience members here. Those questions will be asked directly to Mr. Blair and Mr. Hitchens. We'll also be bringing in our online audience through a series of questions, too. The debate will conclude with short 5-minute closing statements and a second audience vote on the motion. But before I call on our debaters for their opening statements, let's find out how the 2,700 people in this audience voted as they came into the hall. We're going to get those numbers up on the screen now. 22% of you in favor of the motion, 57 opposed, and fully 21% of you undecided.
Dire already. You can tell, you know, from the point of view that religion is a force of good, there's a, you know, more were against that notion, weren't they? Is that right? Yeah. Fallen world.
Now, we also, as you know, asked you a second question tonight. We asked you, depending on what you hear during the debate, are you open to changing your vote? Let's have those numbers too, please. Wow. 75% of this audience, 3/4, could change their vote depending what they hear in the next hour and a half. Ladies and gentlemen, we clearly have a debate on our hands. And remember, we will poll the audience again at the end of our proceedings to find.
Do you remember when Steve Bannon won one of these debates? Steve Bannon did a monk debate against some insufferable globalist. Really? And he changed like half the audience. Yeah, it's quite good. And then afterwards, they claimed, "Oh, the computer messed up." But
you know. Find out which of these two debaters was able to win by swaying us with the power of their arguments. Well, the time has come for introductory remarks. Christopher Hitchens, as we've agreed, you will begin first with your opening statement.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much to the Monk family, great philanthropists, for making this possible. 7 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, for the foundational argument between religion and philosophy leaves me hardly time to praise my distinguished opponent. In fact, I might have to seize a later chance of doing that. I think 3.5 minutes for metaphysics and 3.5 for the material world won't be excessive. And I have a text. And I have a text, and it is from...
What do you think of this easing in, you know?
Yeah, just, kind of, you know, again, this is always kind of useful just to make it... It's as much about making yourself feel, you know, confident and kind of breaking the ice in the room a little bit as well, isn't it? So,
but it's also playing into ethos. You know, this is a man we can trust. He's got sense of humour. He's been congenial to his opponent, you know.
Because I won't take a religious text from a known extremist or fanatic. It's from Cardinal Newman, recently Prime Minister Blair's urging, beatified on his way to canonization, a man whose apologia made many Anglicans reconsider their fealty and made many people join the Roman Catholic Church, and is considered, I think rightly, a great Christian thinker. My text from the apologia. The Catholic Church, said Newman, holds it better for the sun and moon to drop from heaven, for the earth to fail, and for all the many millions on it to die. in extremist agony than that one soul, I will not say will be lost, but should commit one venial sin, should tell one willful untruth, or should steal one farthing without excuse. You'll have to say it's beautifully phrased, ladies and gentlemen. But to me, and here's my proposition, what we have here, and picked from no mean source, is a distillation of precisely what is twisted and immoral in the faith mentality. It's essential fanaticism, its consideration of the human being as raw material, and its fantasy of purity. Once you assume a creator and a plan, it makes
us... Okay, go on.
So again, I think what's interesting here, he's tried to phrase his opponent in a specific way and frame him in a specific place. He's using some, you know, a strong text. You know, again, like strawmanning doesn't really work, I think, at these kind of levels, because you'll just get blown out the water. So he's using, you know, a good source, and now he's kind of like laying out. It's the classic. Here's what I think before I tell you what it's about. Strategy.
Yeah, and also an interesting point. They see human beings as just material. So he's almost like claiming the metaphysical ground away. Like he's kind of putting Blair in a difficult position there, because you know, I'd imagine most Christians would want to reach for the transcendent or something like that. But he's kind of, this is a tricky way of coming in. So kind of interesting strategy, because he's upset the apple cart already.
Objects. In a cruel experiment whereby we are created sick and commanded to be well. I'll repeat that. Created sick and then ordered to be well. And over us to supervise this is installed a celestial dictatorship, a kind of divine North Korea.
Face God. Now,
can I just say, this is literally, quite literally, Satan's argument from Paradise Lost that Christopher Hitchens is giving us. Anyway.
Greedy, exigent, I would say more than exigent, greedy for uncritical praise from dawn till dusk, and swift to punish the original sins with which it so tenderly gifted us in the very first place. However, Let no one say there's no cure. Salvation is offered. Redemption, indeed, is promised at the low price of the surrender of your critical faculties.
See, you know, he's setting himself up as the voice of reason and rationality against blind fanatical faith. So now it like Blair has to basically try to present himself as a reasonable person and not a kind of blind fanatic, basically.
Yeah, also some of the language he used, he mentioned around, I'm not going to use extremist text and stuff like that. He's already like associating those negative words with religion as a whole. I mean, in terms of, is it really hitting the title, is religion a good force for good in the world? It's not really, this just seems like a cringe, out-of-the-box atheist debate about God, as opposed to whether it's a force for good in the world. He's making it a position of, you know, it's not morally good that God has placed us in this situation, but he's not answering the question like that. That in many ways doesn't matter in my mind in terms of the debate title. It's not logical right now.
He's setting up though the idea that reason is the force of good in the world and religion is a force against reason, and therefore it's bad. I think that's what he's setting up for, but let's see where he goes.
Religion, it might be said, must be said, would have to admit, makes extraordinary claims, but though I would maintain that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, rather daringly provides not even ordinary evidence for its extraordinary supernatural claims. Therefore, we might begin by asking, and I'm asking my opponent as well as you when you consider your voting, is it good for the world to appeal to our credulity and not to our skepticism? Is it good for the world to worship a deity that takes sides in wars and human affairs? To appeal to our fear and to our guilt, is it good for the world? To our terror of death, is it good to appeal? To preach guilt and shame about the sexual act and the sexual relationship, is this good?
Yes.
absolute Kuma.
I mean, he's assuming that the answer to all these questions is no, but could be like,
well, exactly, again, when he talks about, you know, God as the dictator, and it's like, yeah, he is. He's literally explicitly says he is king over men. He is the monarch. He is the ultimate authority.
But you see, here's the issue here. He's up against the progressive. So yeah. Religion's not even getting a fair kind of comeback on all of this. He's, because Blair's going to have to twist around now to square his liberal beliefs with his religious beliefs.
For the world, and asking yourself the while, are these really religious responsibilities, as I maintain they are? To terrify children with the image of hell and eternal punishment, not just of themselves, but of their parents and those they love. Perhaps worst of all, to consider women an inferior creation. Is that...
Think of the children. We've got... Think of the women. We've got women's lib.
What's funny about this is that this is so funny, because I remember I got into huge arguments when, you know, the God Delusion came out at school with some atheist friends. But it's just like, you look today and you just see, you know, what have women done with their power? Or you see today, like... Who, like, the indoctrination with children with Christian views has just been replaced by, you know, homosexual views or views of social justice instead, that the vacuum has been filled in. So again, at this time, it's powerful because it doesn't have that kind of legacy of, like, physical things to show that what he's talking about is total rubbish. But, you know, literally there was a video out yesterday about that, was it San Francisco Gay Choir? That was literally like, we're going after your children. You know,
yeah. No, I mean, again, if there was some fair, you know, and we could do the Peter Hitchens, Christopher Hitchens one at a different time, if you want to see what conservative would say, you know, against these sorts of attacks. I mean, I would point out that he is based, a lot of his points are based on a secular religion in the first place. You know, it's obvious that he's drawing on SJW values already. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's carry on.
That good for the world. And can you name me a religion that has not done that? To insist that we are created and not evolved in the face of all the evidence. To say that certain books of legend and myth, man-made and primitive, are revealed, not man-made code.
Sorry, can we stop here again?
Religion.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, he needs to put those bloody glasses down. That's the second time he's almost dropped them. It's a useful tool because it makes you look authoritative, right? Because you're holding them out in your hand. You've got that. They're a symbol of intelligence. They give you additional force. But when you're using a prop like that, if you keep dropping it, it makes you look incompetent and it distracts you from your speech. So again, he's just leaving them on his head.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. He's already discounted the possibility of ancient wisdom. Even if you accept his premise that God's not real, that does not mean to say that things written thousands of years ago can't have any value. So,
exactly. This is, he's trying to turn this debate from a what is the moral value of religion in society, and changing it to. Is Christian interpretations of God true or not? And everything he talks about, again, like, how is whether you believe you're created or evolved, how does that have any relevance to you? Is religion a force for good in the world? He's relying on what he knows really well and using it as a smokescreen for his real arguments.
But what I'm saying is that everything he said so far is predicated on basically. An assumption that of progressive values,
yes,
basically, like he's assuming that nothing from the past can have much value here, which is a, you know, and again, if Blair was, you know, worth anything in this debate, he'd pull out these things, but he's not going to be able to do that because, you know, he's, if anything, more progressive than Christopher Hitchens. So it's going to be interesting to see how Blair squares this circle. But let's see.
Forces nice people to do unkind things, and also makes intelligent people say stupid things. Handed a small baby for the first time, is it your first reaction to think, beautiful, almost perfect, now please hand me the sharp stone for its genitalia that I may do the work of the Lord? No. It is, as the great physicist Steven Weinberg has very aptly put it, in the ordinary moral universe, the good will do the best they can, the worst will do the worst they can. But if you want to make good people do wicked things, you'll need religion. Now, I've got
Just quickly on the interaction with the crowd is really important, because again, a debate is not just a battle of reason between two people and the person with the most logical arguments wins. There's this emotional level and a physical level with the people around you, and if you can make it feel like the crowd is on your side, then it really helps put pressure on the other person. Do you know what I'm saying? So all of these little jokes is again just getting the laughs out, that's adding to the pressure against Blair, because it feels like everyone agrees with Christopher.
And going first was good for Hitchens here, because he got to build the rapport with the audience first, basically. I mean, watching this without knowing anything else, you'd assume that the audience are Hitch fanboys, basically, right?
Yeah.
So he's done a very good job of building rapport with those people.
57 seconds to say why I think this is very self-evident in our material world. Let me ask Tony again, because he's here. And because the place where he's seeking peace is the birthplace of monotheism. So you might think was unusually filled with refulgence and love and peace. Everyone in the civilized world has roughly agreed, including the majority of Arabs and Jews and the international community, that there should be enough room for two states for two peoples in the same land. I think we have a rough agreement on that. Why can't we get it? The UN can't get it. The US can't get it. The Quartet can't get it. The PLO can't get it. The Israeli parliament can't get it. Why can't they get it? Because the parties of God have a veto on it, and everybody knows that this is true. Because of the divine promises made about this territory, there will never be peace. There will never be compromise. There will instead be misery, shame, and tyranny, and people will kill each other's children for ancient books and caves and relics. And who is going to say that this is good for the world? And that's just the example nearest to hand. Have you looked lately at the possibility that we used to discuss as children in fear?
What will happen when...
Yep.
Sorry, just on that. I mean, that's a bold move. Dropping Israel-Palestine into your debate. I mean, fair play to the guy. I mean, I would not do that in a debate ever. But,
It's an especially bold move when your opponent is Tony Blair, who is literally at that point the UN's peace ambassador for the Middle East.
That's a good look. Yeah, cocking a snooker to your opponent, you know, that's good.
But also potentially dangerous, because Blair is a subject matter expert on that particular issue. So, you know, he may have well-prepared rebuttals for that potential. But you could see they did the wide shot there, and you could see Blair clenching his teeth a bit there. So, I mean, very interested to see how Blair responds.
When messianic fanatics get hold of an apocalyptic weapon, well, we're about to find that out as we watch the Islamic Republic of Iran and its Party of God allies make a dress rehearsal for precisely this. Have you looked lately at the revival of Tsarism in Putin's Russia, where the black-cowled, black-coated leadership of Russian Orthodoxy is draped over an increasingly xenophobic, tyrannical, expansionist, and aggressive...
Oh, no.
based.
Imagine Russia being based. I mean, you know.
Also, again, time. You know, obviously there's lots of problems with Iran, but they still have yet to nuke anyone. Just saying.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would say... Watching this 11 years on, Christopher Hitchens' arguments have not aged well, really. Let's see where he goes. Again, taking all those things for granted. You know, the xenophobia, automatic bad. It's like, well, okay, all right, let's carry on.
Regime, have you looked lately at the teaching in Africa and the consequences of it, of a church that says AIDS may be wicked, but not as wicked as condoms? That's exactly no seconds left, ladies and gentlemen. I've done my best. Believe me, I have more.
This crowd is
so
almost sycophantic. I mean, they're just guffawing with...
They probably cried when England kneeled.
Yeah. Awful.
Christopher, thank you for starting our debate. Mr. Blair, your opening remarks, please.
Thank you. First of all, let me say it's a real pleasure to be with you all this evening, to be back in Toronto. It's a particular privilege and honor to be with Christopher in this debate.
Can I just say, you know, I was talking about wrestling before. Mm-hmm. Mick Foley used to do this thing where he'd get a cheap pop. They called it a cheap pop. He'd be nice. Like, he'd always say, I'm delighted to be back in Toronto, and the crowd will go nuts. I mean, this is basically Blair, you know.
Yeah, no, that's good. Again, but you have to win around that crowd again, especially after all those kind of little gags and jokes and stuff. You're never going to get them with just one zinger. You have to warm them up and build them back around again, don't you say?
Yeah, Tony Blair Faith Foundation, dark bastard. Now he's got the Tony Blair Institute of Global Change.
Let me first of all say that I do not regard the leader of North Korea as a religious icon. You will be delighted to know. I'm going to make, it's a biblical number, seven, but I'm going to make 7 points in my 7 minutes. The first is this. It is undoubtedly true.
By the way, good signposting, good framing from Blair.
Yeah, already, exactly. Also, seven, an auspicious number for religion as well.
Yeah.
Also, look, he's looking at the crowd as much like he like Hitchens kind of always look down and looking at his desk. Mm-hmm. You know, Blair's very, he's got great posture. He's very open in his gesticulations, and he's looking out directly at people as well.
Yeah, and he set expectations. All right, I'm ready for 7 points. Let's hear them, you know. Very good.
Yeah.
That people commit horrific acts of evil in the name of religion. It is also undoubtedly true that people do acts of extraordinary common good inspired by religion. Almost half of healthcare in Africa is delivered by faith-based organizations, saving millions of lives. A quarter of worldwide HIV/AIDS care is provided by Catholic organizations. There is the fantastic work of Muslim and Jewish relief organizations. There are in Canada thousands of religious organizations that care for the mentally ill or disabled or disadvantaged or destitute. And here in Toronto, barely 1.5 miles from here, is a shelter run by Covenant House, a Christian charity for homeless youth in Canada.
So, sorry, can you stop there a second?
Proposition.
Yeah.
So again, he started off with more of a utilitarian base. Like, I think what I like about Blair's argument, he's going straight in for the kill on the debate title here. Again, you know, here are the reasons why. Boom, 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 boom. I've got a list. This, and he's mentioning numbers as well. So it's kind of like he can always say, yeah, like maybe there's some extremists that killed a few people, but actually, you know, they cured HIV for hundreds of thousands of people. And then he does a really nice little local drop with the kind of talking about Canada as well. So again, it's about resonating with the audience as well. That's something they'd be like, oh, that means a lot because I love homeless people in Canada, in Toronto as well. So
he's also framing it in positive terms. Like he could have gone in here and said, yeah, but look at all of the people who've been killed by atheism. Like in you know, the communists or whatever, or you know, you mentioned North Korea, what's their religion, Peter, Christopher, you know, but he's taken a very kind of higher line here, and almost like is now like guilt tripping the people who are laughing in a way. So let's see if this works though.
The religion is unadulterated poison is unsustainable. It can be destructive. It can also create a deep well of compassion and frequently does. And the second is that people are inspired to do such good by what I would say is the true essence of faith, which is along with doctrine and ritual particular to each faith, a basic belief common to all faiths in serving and loving God through serving and loving your fellow human beings.
Sorry.
As witness...
Go on.
Just a couple of things. Firstly, it's interesting with the notes because, like, he obviously would have learned this beforehand. And that's why he's able to look up so much, and he's not relying on the points. But he's still doing a bit of filing, and I think there's a bit of anxiousness as well. But also, just notice the way he stretches out his sentences. And again, you know, you don't want us to, you know, I'm notoriously bad for being very fast with my speech and. Mm-hmm. just you know, running my mouth off, but he's purposely like putting breaks into his sentences to make them sound more impactful, and also a little pause before a big word can have more impact at the same time as well. So just listen out for when he intentionally leaves like gaps in his speech.
Yeah, I'm also interested though that he's kind of hitting some of those perennialist notes that I was reading from Carlyle earlier on. Like he's kind of trying to move beyond doctrine, and he's saying, well, you know, it moves people to love their fellow man, which is okay. Let's carry on.
By the life and teaching of Jesus, one of love, selflessness, and sacrifice, the meaning of the Torah. It was Rabbi Hillel who was once famously challenged by someone who said they would convert to religion if he could recite the whole of the Torah standing on one leg. He stood on one leg and said, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That is the Torah. The rest is commentary. Now go and do it."
Less laughs. Also, yeah, weird anecdote.
Yeah, weird anecdote. And also, like, is that true? Probably put anything in. Is that really true?
Well, what's quite good about that, that, like, again, from his perspective, that's like a Jew talking the language of a Christian, you know?
So, yeah, exactly, yeah. Yes, exactly, because he's basically trying to say that all religions have got this kind of basic message of, like, New Testament Jesus, basically.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit dishonest, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. But let's carry on. You know, that he's universalizing all religions to be the same religion, essentially.
Yes, yeah. And again, it's interesting. So he's got this, he's fighting one debate about, you know, with the title, but he's also trying to put forward the ideas of his faith foundation at the same time as part of it. So it's interesting.
It's probably why he agreed to do this, right?
Yeah, this is like it's the meta war going on.
Because look, the globalists got their fingers into every religion back then, or even probably even before then, you know. And look who was there again, the Dark Lord.
The teaching of Prophet Muhammad, saving one life as if you're saving the whole of humanity. The Hindu searching after selflessness. The Buddhist concepts of Karuna, Mudita, and Metta, which all subjugate selfish desires to care for others, see consistence specifically on respect for others of another faith. That, in my view, is the true face of faith. And the values derived from this essence offer to many people a benign, positive, and progressive framework by which to live our daily lives.
All the religions of the world provide a progressive framework. What a fucking twat.
Again, this sounds like the mission statement of his foundation, as opposed to an actual argument.
Yeah, and as Nathan Hutt is saying, there's no mention of God. I mean, he's literally putting a utilitarian concept here, that this is basically a good vehicle for globalism.
Stimulating the impulse to do good, disciplining the propensity to be selfish and bad. And faith, defined in this way, is not simply faith as...
Can I just say, did you see the Blair fingers there? He loved that gesture, the... putting his, you know, temples of his, what do you call it, making that little, you know, he puts the tips of his fingers together. That was always a Blair special. As one of his special moves. He's done it once so far. Just look out for it.
Solace in times of need, though it can be, nor a relic of unthinking tradition, still less a piece of superstition or an explanation of biology. Instead, it answers a profound spiritual yearning, something we feel and sense instinctively.
There, he's doing it again.
This is a spiritual presence.
Okay, yes. Yeah,
bigger,
yeah.
More important, more meaningful than just us alone, that has its own power separate from our power, and that even as the world's marvels multiply, makes us kneel in humility, not swagger in pride.
He's also getting good coverage in the room as well. Oh my goodness, that face you just paused on there. There you go.
But think kneeling. He wants kneeling in humility, not swaggering with pride.
Interesting, yeah. Do you see him, like, he looks to the left and looks to the right as well. So again, he's getting good. He's working in the room. Because again, everyone wants the feeling that the person's looking at them and speaking to them personally. That's a classic preach technique. When you're talking about the hell verses, you want to look at the guy at the back of the church, basically.
I do fear, though, that this isn't really his crowd, is it? I still feel like this is Hitchens' crowd.
Yeah, 100%.
Blair to have to win over. Yeah.
And that if faith is seen in this way, science and religion are not incompatible, destined to fight each other until eventually the cool reason of science extinguishes the fanatical flames of religion. Rather, science educates us as to how the physical world is and how it functions, and faith educates us as to the purpose to which such knowledge is put, the values that should guide its use, and the limits of what science and technology can do, not to make our lives materially richer, but rather richer in spirit. And so...
That's actually quite a strong point, I would have thought.
Yeah. Also, it's interesting, though, because, again, in terms of globalists, there's many that have gone down the ultra-science route of transhumanism. So they're kind of like... It's interesting that seeing how the decades gone by. And again, Blair's always been on this, progressive, one world, one nation kick, while, someone like Gates has always been down the kind of, science going into the realm of religion and, receiving transcendence through, uploading your brain to a server or something like that. So, yeah.
And yet they're allies. They work to, one funds the other. It's interesting, that, isn't it?
Imagine, indeed, a world without religious faith. Not just no place of worship, no prayer, no scripture, but no men or women who, because of their faith, dedicating their lives to others, showing forgiveness where otherwise they wouldn't, believing through their faith that even the weakest and most powerless have rights, and they have a duty to defend them. And yes, I agree, in a world without religion, the religious fanatics may be gone. But I ask you, would fanaticism be gone?
Also a strong point. Because we've seen that the fanaticism has got ever stronger, hasn't it? Secular faith.
Again, it's interesting, again, how Oran McIntyre likes to kind of highlight that all of the evangelical Christian arguments of this period all came true. But they were never believed at the time, because it's really hard to convince someone about that without seeing the consequences of it. So, again, to us now, it seems totally obvious, but I can imagine to that crowd, they're thinking he's probably some kind of nutter who isn't going to see the bright future that we're all going to have in this kind of atheist republic.
Has crossed my mind. Do you think Blair was being like a controlled opposition in this debate, that he's intentionally gonna
I genuinely think his strategy at this time, because I think his strategy has changed to more of that transhumanist side, but at this stage there was basically infiltrating through the Catholic Church and that progressive wing of the church, I should say, but also the kind of pan-religionists. But I think because In the meantime, we've had harder lines from the Islamic community, from the Orthodoxy in Russia. So I feel like that they've realised that the kind of universalist religion stuff that he's talking about here just isn't going to work. When the Buddhists start, beating up the Muslims or whatever, the Rohingya, it's not going to work, is it? So I think he's pivoted from this viewpoint.
Interesting. Which is why it's now the Tony Blair Foundation for Global Change rather than the Faith Foundation.
Yeah, exactly. It's about they've gone down that pure science route of it's climate change, it's transhumanism as the way to get change. Because again, so many people have turned away from religion. I think that this. I think it's just like now. He's in a room and he's just getting no resonance whatsoever. He's in a room of people who are very hostile to his message, and so he's like, "What's the point in doing this if I can't? You're not going to get power through that organization."
So he switched up, which shows what he really cared about ultimately.
Yeah.
So.
And then realize that such an imagined vision of a world without religion is not, in fact, new. The 20th century. Was a century scarred by visions that had precisely that imagining in their vision and at their heart, and gave us Hitler and Stalin and Pol Pot.
Getting in the Boomer Truth regime stuff, brilliant.
Yeah.
This may play to this audience, maybe.
Yeah, and also being a bit more aggressive as well. Like you said, everything previously has been these kind of like positive defense arguments, and now this is more emotional level stuff as well. Again, like Pol Pot, you know, he's choosing, you know, like the Khmer Rouge, like it's the body count, trying to get people like worried about stuff now. So,
yeah.
In this vision, obedience to the will of God was for the weak. It was the will of man that should dominate. So I do not deny for a moment that religion can be a force for evil. But I claim that where it is based essentially on a perversion of faith. And I assert that at least religion can also be a force for good. And where it is, that it's true to what I believe is the essence of faith. And I say that a world without religious faith would be spiritually, morally, and emotionally diminished. So I know very well that you can point, and quite rightly Christopher does, to examples of where people have used religion to do things that are terrible and that have made the world a worse place. But I ask you not to judge all people of religious faith by those people any more than we would judge politics by bad politicians or indeed journalists by bad journalists. The question is, along with all the things that are wrong with religion, is there also something within it that helps the world to be better and people to do good?
No, this is an interesting rhetorical strategy he's gone for here, Farah, because he's essentially conceding one of the major attack angles of Christopher Hitchens. But in making that concession, he in some way strips it of its power, because there's no point in Christopher Hitchens continuing that attack line because Blair's already conceded it.
That's true.
And this is classic Blair containment. I mean, I don't know if it's going to work in this debate, but that's his containment. It's like, oh, I agree with you. But he always does that because it's like, well, where can you go? He's conceded your point. He did that with the whole abortion thing that we were talking about before, if you remember.
Yes.
He always does that. Very, very clever strategy.
Also, just in terms of his kind of vocals right now, he's gone a little bit quieter, a little bit softer, which kind of feels to me like he's about to round up, sum up his talk. He also kind of bookended his more aggressive stuff with a little joke, and also like laughing at himself a little bit when he meant like paused for the politics as well. That's quite good. A good pause can make jokes better and get bigger laughs, basically, but you just got to time it 100% right.
And I would submit there is. Thank you.
Well, Tony, your training in Parliament, I can see, had you just perfectly landing that right on the 7-minute mark. Ladies and gentlemen, we're moving into our rebuttal round, and I'd like the audience to get engaged, to applaud when they hear something that the debaters say that they like, and also to help me enforce our time limit. So when you see that clock ticking down, start applauding, and that'll move us through this in an orderly fashion. So Christopher, it's very, now very, your opportunity in our first of two rebuttal rounds to respond.
Yeah. I don't like this idea of the clapping. I think it's a terrible idea.
No, anyway. It's literally, you should just told him to stop. He should have basically just manned up and said to, looked in his eyes and said, Hitchens, just shut up after your time.
Yeah. But womanly, he's just, womanly exactly, moderating.
Yeah. Exactly. Pathetic.
On to Mr. Blair.
Joe, four, is that right?
There's two rounds of rebuttals. Each of you has the opportunity to go back and forth. And yes, you have 4 minutes. For each speaker within each of those rounds, if that's not too confusing.
That sounds all right. I've got 4 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah, good. Then hold your applause, for heaven's sake. Well, now, in fairness, no one was arguing that religion should or will die out of the world. And all I'm arguing is that it'd be better if there was a great deal more by way of an outbreak of secularism. Logically, if Tony's right, I would be slightly better off, not much, but slightly better off, being a Wahhabi Muslim, or a 12er Shia Muslim, or a Jehovah's Witness, than I am wallowing as I do in mere secularism. What I'm arguing, and really seriously, is what we need is a great deal more of one and a great deal less of the second. And I knew it would come up that we'd be told about charity. And I take this very seriously. Because we know, ladies and gentlemen, as it happens, we're the first generation of people who do really, what the cure for poverty really is. It deluded people for a long, long time. The cure for poverty has a name, in fact. It's called the empowerment of women. If you...
Oh, fucking hell.
That is the worst argument I've ever heard in my life, I'd say. That's terrible.
And he got an applause for it as well.
That's literally like...
Why was this guy anybody's hero? Why is it? Why if people still say... I still see people say, oh yeah, the better Hitchens, the superior Hitchens.
No, literally.
Cringe. I mean, talk about wince, Pharaoh.
That was so cringe. Also, it's quite... his little argument beforehand where it's kind of like, you know, by rights, I should be a better person as a Wahhabi Muslim. But again, he's sort of conflating what Tony was saying. He was saying, you know, on average... the average guy on the street is going to benefit from religion. They're not having it. But again, people are thinking, you know, would I want Christopher being like a Muslim or a, you know, this weird Iranian sect? And also, did you notice he used like three relatively more extreme forms, like the Jehovah's Witnesses, that he know that like it wasn't, he was saying, he didn't say, oh, like a Buddhist or something that would have got like been more
positive
appealing
to
the crowd. So that was quite a good little device. But then that little sentence there was just a total crowd pleaser cringe sentence, but let's see where he goes with it. I think,
you know, it really took me by shock because I was getting ready, I was gearing up for him to say, yeah, you know, the free exchange of goods on markets, or you know, like I was getting ready for him, but no, yeah, women, yeah. All right, Chris.
If you give women some control over the rate at which they reproduce, if you give them some say, take them off the animal cycle of reproduction to which nature and some doctrine, religious doctrine, condemns them, and then if you'll throw in a handful of seeds perhaps and some credit, the floor of everything in that village, not just poverty, but education, health and optimism will increase. It does.
I have never heard this argument before, by the way.
I have, like, Tony Blair, Gates, sorry, William Fences, Malthusian, you know, population, depopulation strategy, basically, is what he's saying. When the women are in control of their reproductive rights, they don't have as many children in the village, so there's less demand, so if, you know, it feeds everyone. I mean, this is the worst kind of terrible, these are both globalist messages. It's quite funny seeing the two sides of the same coin, so.
Yeah, just remarkable. All right, let's carry on.
Isn't that a tried in Bangladesh, tried in Bolivia? It works all the time. Name me one religion that stands for that, or ever has. Wherever you look in the world and you try to remove the shackles of ignorance and disease and stupidity from women, it is invariably the clerisy that stands in the way. Or in the case of...
Yeah. Sorry, just on the whole women thing, it's actually quite genius because, again, the guy knows that these are like bourgeois, middle class, like urban, liberal Torontans. You know, they've already been mainlined a stream of feminist nonsense their entire life, and so he's tapping into, again, other resonance points. These little things that have been that whole, just by mentioning the word like women's empowerment. You're tapping into what your audience has been trained to applaud their entire lives. And so he's had one of the biggest claps so far out of like a relatively like illogical and unrelated to the debate sentence.
I mean, I would say that they're rapturous at this point, you know, just for this, you know, liberal bilge that he's giving us. All right, let's see where he goes.
Grant this to Catholic charities, say, which I would hope are doing a lot of work in Africa. If I was a member of a church that had preached that AIDS was not as bad as condoms. I'd be putting some conscience money into Africa too, I must say. But it won't bring, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be funny.
It's also the use of language, the conscience money is quite a good one. I like the way he's saying it. So it's not charity. He's trying to undermine Tony's point around, look at all these like utilitarian things that have happened, by saying, oh, they're only doing it because they feel guilty, or they're only doing it because they're bad people. So this is a more reasonable attempt to undermine what Tony was saying, I think.
Yeah.
If I was trying to be funny, you mistook me. It won't bring back the millions of people who've died wretched deaths because of that teaching. That still goes on. I'd like to hear a word of apology from the religious about that, if it was on offer. After all, otherwise I'd be accused of judging them by the worst of them. And this isn't done, as Tony says so wrongly, in the name of religion. It's a direct precept, practice, and enforceable discipline of religion. Is it not, sir? In this case, I think you'll find that it is. But if you're going to say, all right, the Mormons will tell you the same. You may think it's a bit cracked to think that Joseph Smith found another Bible buried in upstate New York, but you should see our missionaries in action. I'm not impressed. I'd rather have no Mormons and no missionaries, quite honestly, and no Joseph Smith. Do we grant to Hamas and to Hezbollah, both of whom will tell you and incessantly do, look at our charitable work. Without us, Effendi, the poor of Gaza, the poor of Lebanon, where would they be but for our hand? They're right. They do a great deal of charitable work. It's nothing compared to the harm that they do, but it's a great deal of work all the same. I'm also familiar with the teachings of the great Rabbi Hillel. I even know where he plagiarized the story from, if he had access to the stuff. The injunction not to do to another what would be repulsive if done to yourself is found in the Analects of Confucius, if you want to date it. But actually, it's found in the heart of every person in this room. Everybody knows that much. We don't require divine...
Go on. Again, that's quite clever, because that's kind of saying, oh, it's in everyone's heart. So you think naturally... Yes, it is in my heart, because I'm a naturally good person. You know, most people want to think they're good people. So again, that's quite a clever way of switching everyone on to saying, you know, no one naturally thinks I'm a terrible person, apart from doomers. But so again, he's constantly trying to win the crowd round.
Yeah, he's come out blazing for this second round here, hasn't he?
Yeah, much better. I mean, well, apart from the women's thing, but
the actual arguments. The actual arguments have been poor, in my opinion, but he's been rhetorically effective, I would say, for this crowd as well. Because that's another part, the kairos, I guess you'd say, you know, the time, the place, the opportunity. This is the right sort of message for this Toronto crowd in 2010.
Yeah. I'm permission to know right from wrong. We don't need tablets administered to us 10 at a time in tablet form on pain of death to be able to have a moral argument. No, we have... We have the reasoning and the moral suasion of Socrates and of our own abilities. We don't need dictatorship to give us right from wrong. And that's my lot. Thank you.
Sorry. Before Tony starts, again, nice little use of Socrates, because again, it's trying to elevate his position from rank secularism to, you know, metaphysical philosophy instead. So again, that's a nice way of making it. It's like a classic appeal to authority.
Yeah, and you could tell he was pleased with himself when he sat down there. Felt he had the best of it.
You know? Yeah, so, I think so.
Let's see how Dark Lord comes back.
In the name of fairness and equity, Mr. Blair, I'm going to give you an additional 25 seconds for your first rebuttal.
Sorry. Who is this guy? Literally, he is just like such a soy boy. This is the prototype soy boy. Again, why don't you just stop Hitchens? So cringe. Carry on, sorry.
I don't think we should think that because you can point to examples of prejudice in the name of religion, that bigotry and prejudice and wrongdoing are wholly owned subsidiaries of religion. There are plenty of examples of prejudice against women, against gay people, against others that come from outside the world of religion. And the claim that I make is not that everything the church has done in Africa is right, but let me tell you one thing it did do, and it did it whilst I was Prime Minister of the UK. The churches together formed a campaign for the cancellation of debt. They came together, they succeeded, and the first beneficiaries of the cancellation of debt were young girls going to school in Africa, because for the first time they had free primary education. So I agree that not everything the church or the religious communities have done around the world is right, but I do say, at least accept, that there are people doing great work day in, day out, who genuinely are not prejudiced or bigoted, but are working with people who are afflicted by famine and disease and poverty, and they are doing it inspired by their faith. And of course it's the case that not everybody... of course it's the case that you do not have to be a person of faith in order to do good work. I've never claimed that. I would never claim that. You know, I know lots of people, many, many people, who are people not of faith at all, but who do fantastic and decent work for their communities and for the world. My claim is just very simple. There are nonetheless people who are inspired by their faith to do good. I mean, I think of people I met some time ago.
I would say here his inclusiveness is weakening his argument.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to be too inclusive and too, and this is a failure of liberal religion, I think. Like he should. I mean, I've seen data, for example, to suggest that the more secular a country, the less charitable they are, for example.
Yeah.
You know, and he could have pulled out some of those stats, but instead he's going for this, you know, it's not a prerequisite to be good. It just, you know, some people happen to be, which is not a very difficult logical argument to.
Yeah,
it's not an argument really if you think
this is literally like just rehashing what you said the first round again, ceding ground unnecessarily. He's doing that Tony Blair special, like you said, being like, you know, I've got an atheist friend, you know, it's a classic strategy that never works, but he has yet to attack Hitchens on the same level. Or undermine what he's saying in the same level of complexity. Yeah. He's just saying it with more vigor and more anger.
Yeah, and I mean, just for foundations of logic fans, you can't make an argument from two some statements. There must be an all or a no in there, right? You can't make a conclusion from two statements that are, you know, some people do this, some people do that. Because it's not an argument. Do you know what I mean? It's not a logical argument. So this is some very weak premises he's using here. But anyway, let's carry on.
Go in South Africa, nuns who were looking after children that were born with HIV/AIDS. Now, these are people who are working and living alongside and caring for people inspired by their faith. Is it possible for them to have done that without their religious faith? Of course, it's possible for them to have done it. But the fact is, that's what motivated them. So what I say to you is, at least look, what we shouldn't do is end up in a situation where we say, right, we've got six hospices here and one suicide bomber there, and how does it all equalize out? That's not a very productive way of arguing this. And actually, I thought one of the most interesting things that Christopher said is that we're not going to drive religion out of the world.
Brought out the little finger pointers. the Blair, that's another Tony Blair special. The only thing we haven't had yet now is the thumb point, but he loves the two fingers. He loves the little the finger temple that he makes, and so we've seen two of them now, so just look out for these gestures.
I feel like he's been really rattled by that. I feel like he's just sort of meandering around and not saying anything new, and he hasn't really gone on the offensive in the same way that Hitchens literally just like ripped him to shreds, in my opinion.
Yeah, so. And it's because Blair's real religion is globalism, which we know. This is just a cover for him to basically subvert and use the authority of the religions for his own ends. We know this. So
yeah,
that's the Dark Lord for you.
And that's true. We're not. And actually, I think for people of faith to have debates with those who are secularists is actually good and right and healthy, and it's what we should be doing. And I'm not claiming that everyone should congregate on MySpace. I'm simply claiming one very simple thing, that if we can't drive religion out of the world, because many people of faith believe it and believe it very deeply, let's at least see how we do make religion a force for good, how we do encourage the...
See, now you see the real agenda coming out here. How can we make religion a force for good? That's really what he wants to do. Think about that.
This whole thing feels like he just doesn't care about the debate. It's just about, he knows that there's going to be some bigwigs in the room, and how can I appeal to those people, get my foundation? This whole thing is not about the debate. It's just about, this is a networking opportunity.
Yeah, he's just there to be like, listen, idiots, we are posing all the churches of the world.
Yeah.
Join us, basically.
Join us. Yeah.
I mean, that's basically the subtext to all of this, but anyway.
Those people of faith who are trying to do good, and how we unite those against those who want to pervert religion and turn it into a badge of identity used in opposition to others. So...
Notice, by the way, in his world, basically any religion being true to itself is a perversion of religion. It's that classic Blairite inversion of reality, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because he's basically defined good religion as somebody with...
Universalist, yeah.
Universalist, liberal, progressive values, basically. You know, anti-prejudice, anti-bigotry, blah, blah, blah.
I would simply finish by saying this. There are many situations where faith has done wrong. But there are many situations in which wrong has been done without religion playing any part in it at all.
Again, these some or not all, not all statements can't form a logical syllogism. It's an invalid or a bad argument by definition, because you cannot derive a conclusion from two some sums, but from two some statements or two not all statements. You must have a definite all or no statement in there in order to make an argument, and he's just not doing it.
This is just pure, just like, he's just flapping around like a fish out of water right now. This is pathetic.
Yeah, it's bad, really bad. And obviously it's bad because of what, you know, he's not really there. I mean, I hate to say he's there in bad faith, but, you know, his faith foundation was in bad faith, if you ask me.
Hey.
Condemn all people of religious faith because of the bigotry or prejudice shown by some, and let us at least acknowledge that some good has come out of religion, and that we should celebrate.
Christopher, your second rebuttal, please.
sorry. Look at the body language there of this guy. He sort of tips. He does like a little m'lady tip when he's putting his hand out.
You hate this man more than anyone in the entire world.
He's just the worst.
Oh my God! It's an amazing test of audience tolerance. Well, all right. Well, how splendidly you notice we progress, ladies and gentlemen. Now it's okay. Some religious people are sort of all right. I think I seem to be bargaining one of the greatest statesmen of the recent past down a bit.
I mean, that's a freebie Blair's given him.
Yeah,
basically,
exactly.
I mean, Hitchens has come to win this, and Blair's like, you know, I'm not really going to defend religion here. I'm just going to make some, not all statements.
Yeah, that's like a punch to the face. Within the first, do you know what I'm saying? In a joking way, this is some quality. Like, his opening statement was terrible, but he's really like bringing the fight to Blair now. So,
Well, at least he's come to scrap. Blair hasn't come to win this debate. Blair has just come to, you know, bring more people into his POS agenda, basically. Mm-hmm. So,
but necessarily opposed to that. Just to finish on the charity point, I once did a lot of work with a man called Sebastio Salgado. Some of you will know him, great man, great photographer, on polio questions. I went to Calcutta with him, elsewhere. Nearly got rid of polio, nearly made it join smallpox as a disease, a thing of the past, a filthy memory, except for so many religious groups in Bengal and elsewhere, Afghanistan, West Africa, so on, telling their children, don't go and take the drops. It's a conspiracy. It's against God. It's
they're on the anti-vax front now.
It's against God's design. By the way, that argument isn't terribly new. When smallpox was a scourge, Timothy Dwight, the great divine, who was the head of Yale, said taking Dr. Jenner's injection was a was an interference with God's design as well. That's sort of, by the way.
Pause again, sorry.
You need something like.
Yeah, go on.
The transhumanists will use this argument not to put the chip that lives in your stomach or whatever, you know, the the eatable chip. It's literally the same argument. But again, it's a testament to Hitchens' ability to kind of remember stuff that Tony said. And again, he's sort of like accessing these out-of-the-box arguments that he's had time and time again with loads of other people. And again, I think that was quite good for the rebuttal stage is he just knows his field so well that he can just pick up these little words and then say, oh, by the way, here's this huge little story I can bring. Again, this kind of emotive little vignette about polio. And again, it's going to really appeal to the kind of science, scientism of the audience as well. And, you know, appeal to science is a very strong argument at this time, as it is today.
Yeah. And I can't help but feel this has been set up, basically, because Blair doesn't really care about it encroaching secularism. He cares about how could he, what is it, make religion a force for good.
Yeah.
So he's not really there to defend this. He said, like, religion can be a force for good if we control it. That's basically his his argument.
It is. He's not having a debate with Hitchens. He's having a conversation with other people in the room. And this feels like we're sort of behind the scenes of like Davos or something. And then seeing the elite class decide on where to go to next.
Like UNICEF to get major work done if you want to alleviate poverty and misery and disease. And for me, my money will always go to organizations like Médecins Sans Frontières, like Oxfam and many others who, strange enough.
Interesting. What's come out about Oxfam?
I was going to say, yeah, serial prostitute users, like child molesters. You know, it's again, just Blair didn't have time on his side. And again, if you did this today, Hitchens would just get wrecked from just the sheer amount of things that have come to reality that were probably happening at this time. Literally, like you know, Haiti's coming up in a bit. And again, that's just what's been recorded. So goodness knows what's happened since the 90s with Oxfam. And it's not just Oxfam, it's loads of NGOs. And it's funny, again, how he's relying on the NGOs who have, Médecins Sans Frontières is responsible for the smuggling of people from Africa into Europe. You know, helping people get onto lifeboats, etc., being help subverting other countries' borders. So again, I could bring a whole lot of evidence showing how these quote-unquote good secular organizations are bringing down the quality of life of the people of England. So
I could just imagine Blair, the Dark Lord, sitting there though thinking, does he not know they all work for me? Does he not know I have my finger in every pie? You can't name an NGO that I don't influence. But he's obviously hiding his power levels because that's what Blair does.
Yeah.
Let's carry on.
Enough. Go out into the world, do good for their fellow creatures for its own sake. They don't take... Well, they don't take the Bible along, as people do to Haiti all the time. We keep catching them doing it. Their money is being spent flat out on proselytization. It's a function of the old thing that was hand in hand with imperialism. It's the missionary tradition. They can call it charity if they will, but it doesn't stand a second look.
Sorry.
So much on the...
And again, this is quite clever, tying it to colonialism, tying it to imperialism, you know, which again isn't true at all. When you look at it, the missionary movements were outside of the British Empire for a long, long time. And again, looking today, look at Haiti, secular Haiti. President's literally assassinated. Anyway, yeah. There you go.
Another success story in Haiti's long and glorious history. Yeah.
The business of doing good, except perhaps to add, since I have you for some extra minutes, that Mr. Blair and I at different times gave quite a lot of our years to the Labour Party and to the Labour movement. And if the promise of religion was true, had been true, right up until the late 19th century in, say, Britain or North America or Canada, that good works are what's required and should be enough, and those who give charity should be honoured, those who receive it should be grateful. Two rather revolting ideas in one, I have to say. There would be no need for human and social and political action. We could rely on being innately good, which we know we can't rely upon, which I never suggested that we could or should. So, now what would... I'm intrigued now. So religion could be a good thing after all, sometimes, we think.
Mm-hmm. Again, he's actually said quite a good argument around, you know, are people naturally good? And he's had to sort of defend, he accidentally let slip an argument against himself and then had to sort of backtrack on himself. And again, yes. If Blair's listened and picked up on anything, he should be focusing on that in this segment. So let's see if he actually picked up on that. The question is, are people naturally good? And again, because it's, you know, do they have that inner light inside of them that Hitchens referenced earlier?
Yes, self-control. He's had to come out for the constrained vision against the unconstrained vision here, which is basically a religious position. Anyway, let's see.
So now the proposition. What would a religion have to do to get that far? Well, I think it would have to give up all supernatural claims. It would have to say... Please. It would have to say... No, you are not to do this under the threat of reward, heaven, or the terror of punishment, hell. No, we can't offer you miracles. Find me the church that will say, forget all that. Faith, healing, no. It would have to give that up. It would have to give up the idea of an eternal, unalterable authority figure who was judge, jury, and executioner against whom there could be no appeal and who wasn't finished with you even when you died.
Sorry.
Go on.
Again, I don't see how any of this is relevant to the thing. It's like, so, like, imagine a religion that forced people to do good things with the threat of heaven, threat of hell. Sorry. Again, it doesn't answer it doesn't necessarily go against the point. Is religion the force for good in the world? Again, he's trying to. He's just using this as a platform for his theology ideas, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's very obvious that there's two men with their own agendas here. Hitchens is his atheism, and Blair's is posing all global religions with his foundation. So, yeah.
That's quite a lot for religion to give up, don't you think? But who would not say it would be better off without it if it was what Tony Blair would like it to be? An aspect of humanism, an aspect of compassion. An aspect of the realizations of human solidarity, the knowledge that we are, in fact, all bound up one with another, that we have responsibilities to one to another, and that, as I do when I give blood, partly because I don't lose the pint forever, I can always get it back, but that there's actually a sense of pleasure to be had in helping your fellow creature. I think that should be enough. Thank you.
This crowd is rapturous for Hitchens. They're in embarrassment to me, but
the second round was less good. I feel like he was again not really monopolizing on the success. He should have, like, that first line was excellent, and then he just sort of went downhill from there. And again, literally making Blair's best counter argument himself there was a real shot in the foot. But
I do hope that us revisiting this debate, you know, what, 10, 11 years on, that people can see that Christopher Hitchens was basically an enemy. basically, like, you know, we talk about the Boomer Truth regime, but he's basically a kind of all his arguments are cliches. All his arguments are just progressive, basically. You know, he is a prototype for everything that people hate now. So I hope people can see that, because I still see quite a lot of Christopher Hitchens simping going on. It surprises me. Maybe it's nostalgia or something, yeah. But I just, you know,
As soon as I saw the debate between him and another guy about should slaves be paid reparation, and he agreed with that fact, I knew instantly that he was an enemy. So,
yeah.
Tony, must feel like the House of Commons all over again.
I don't know. So far, they're a little politer, actually.
Your final rebuttal, please.
Yeah.
I'll just say we'll probably won't listen to the audience questions. Then we should just wrap it up and see who we give it to with the rebuttals. And I'll skip to the end and see who won.
Sure.
I would predict that Christopher Hitchens is going to win with the crowd. But,
100%.
It all depends, I guess, what your experience of religious people is. I mean, my experience of the people I was with last week in Africa that include deeply religious people is not actually that they're doing what they're doing because of heaven and hell. They're doing it for love of their fellow human beings. And that's, I think, something very fine. What's more, that they believe and that this love of their fellow human beings is bound up with their faith. So it's not something, you know, yes, of course, it is absolutely true. They might decide this.
Go on.
The whole stuff around love of the fellow human beings, that's, again, ties into this, you know, brotherhood of man points, which, again, is, you know, tied into that kind of universalist idea. So,
yeah, and can I just say, the one of the things I'll point out is the theological paucity of this. Of this debate here. I mean, anybody who watches this channel knows I am not a very good theologian. Even I know that this is a, you know, when it comes to doctrine or when it comes to what the actual religions of the world believe, Blair could have had many, many different ways of coming back at this. Like, even the idea that you're doing good to go to heaven and you're doing, you know, you avoid doing bad because you don't want to go to hell. Like, I've spoken to enough Christians to know that that is really not what is said, either in the Bible or in the theology. So,
yeah. And again, he could pivot that and say, that's not the Jews don't have heaven and hell. And again, same with Buddhists. It's not quite the same. I feel like he's not really fighting this. It's so weird. He's not doing any strong arguments against Hitchens at all.
Very interesting thing to go back and watch. Because ultimately they were both globalists. Ultimately they were on the same side. Probably after this, they had a networking drink and made some sort of deal to, you know, for UNICEF to work with the Blair Foundation.
That's it. They had a whole lot of suits in a row. And as soon as I saw that, it's like, oh, obviously the all the NGOs are in town, aren't they?
Yeah. Here we go, you know. But Tony Blair, you know, global ambassador for the ADL. Tony Blair, you know, UN ambassador for the Middle East. Tony Blair. I mean, you know. He's wearing about 15 different hats, quite literally wherever he goes, and it's because he's part of this. His real faith and mission is the same as Bill Gates is, and ultimately the same as Christopher Hitchens is. You know, anyway, let's carry on.
Irrespective of the fact that they have religious faith, but their faith, they feel, is an impulse to do that good, and. You know, I don't recognize the description of the work that they do in what Christopher said. In Sierra Leone, where I was, you have Christians and Muslims working together to deliver healthcare in that country. That's religion playing a positive role. They're working across the faith divide and doing it because they, again, believe that their faith impels them to do that. When we look back in history, yes, of course, you can see plenty of examples of where religion has played a negative role. You can see great examples, for example, in the abolition of slavery, where religious reformers joined with secular reformers in order to bring about the abolition of slavery.
And another virtue signal clap, you know.
Yeah.
Let's get away from this idea that religion created poverty. You know, there are bad things that have happened in the world outside of religion. Right? And when you look at the 20th century and you see the great scars of political ideology around views that had absolutely dramatically at their heart fascism, the communism of Stalin, absolutely at their heart was the eradication of religion. And what I would say to you is, get rid of religion, you're not going to get rid of fanaticism, and you're not going to get rid of the wrong in the world. So the question is, how then do we make sense of religion having this vital part in the world today, since it is growing and not diminishing?
Sorry,
how do we
make
sense of this?
Go on.
This is really interesting. I feel like he's literally kind of like, you know, rolling the carpet out to his tent for his vision with a foundation. And he's like, look, you're never going to get rid of religion. So, you know, why don't you join my gang, join my elites that are out in the audience, join my gang. We're going to take over and co-opt it. And, you know,
yeah,
Christians and Muslims are going to work together and they're going to create healthcare. It's going to be great. This is just a big pitch to people who are in the room, as opposed to, again, trying to debate the point.
Yeah, and I'm sure he got plenty of donors after this. You know, whether he wins or loses the debate, that's why he's there. We know that's what he's about.
Yeah, also interesting how, like, again, the one thing that progressives love about, the only thing that they'll clap to about Christianity is the anti-slavery thing. And again, they were just like lapping it up.
Or I hate people from Toronto in 2010. They're probably even worse now.
Well, I was going to say that. I mean, they've literally tearing down statues of Queen Victoria. So was it in Winnipeg? Probably, yeah, 10 times worse now.
And this is where, yes, there is an obligation on the people of faith to try and join across the faith divide.
That's another Blair. The hand, the kind of hand blade. This is another Blair special. The hand blade, yeah.
It's about the face. That's the reason for my foundation. We have people of different religious faiths. We've actually got a program where young people team up with each other of different faiths and work together in Africa on malaria, back in their own faith communities, and here in Canada. We have a schools program that allows schools to link up using the technology so that kids of different faiths can talk to each other across the world.
In the schools already there, you see.
Oh, see, I mean, this is talking. I talked about the network of tens. I mean, Tony Blair's network of 10,000s, basically. I mean, this guy is off the chart when it comes to knowing how power works and how to use power. Lucky he's already laid all those foundations. Imagine how cursed those schools are that the Tony Blair Faith Foundation set up. Imagine what their ideology is. Imagine how subversive it has been to each of those religions on the ground. You know, it's disgusting. It's just, I mean, people say I've got, like, he lives rent free in my head, but people have to understand the power levels of these people. Blair is interesting just because he's visible. Most of these people you've never heard of, you know, because he's not going to be the only one working like this, right?
Yeah.
And here's the thing, when they start to talk about their faith, they don't actually talk in terms of heaven and hell and a God that's an executioner of those that do wrong. They talk in terms of their...
Go on.
They should do. Carry on.
They should be more old. They should be more fire and brimstone. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I've got this edition of Carlyle looking at me all the way throughout this. He's so stern and grim. I can feel like the past judging everybody. Just by this picture, I wish you could see it. Anyway, let's carry on.
Basic feeling that love of God can be expressed best through love of neighbor and actions in furtherance of the compassion and help needed by others. And this is in 2007, religious organizations in the US gave 1.5 times the amount of aid that USAID did. not insignificant. So my point is very, very simple. You can list all the faults of religion, just as you can list the faults of the politicians, the journalists, and any other profession. But for people of faith, the reason why they try to do good, and when they do it, is because their faith motivates them to do so. And that is genuinely the proper face of faith.
Again, yeah. that's interesting. Again, you know, religion is the motivator. So again, the coded message here is: if you can choose the religion, you can change the motivation. That's what I read from that. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and he seemed to finish strongly. Actually, the crowd give him quite an applause here. I mean, I still think they're ultimately going to be on Hitchens' side, but I think he finished strong.
Well, again, he didn't touch the point at all. He should have. Again, that point around the natural state of man. And again, I would be bringing up, like, you know, are tribes in Amazon, do they have as much respect for women as you apparently do, Mr. Hitchens? You know, stuff like that. You could get some really good zingers off, but he's just so non-aggressive. It's just constantly just like regurgitating some of those main points, but at the same time, it's all about sending these coded messages out to the audience.
Yeah, because ultimately, as we've talked about, his plan is just co-opting and controlling religion as much as he can for his progressive vision of the world.
Yeah.
Okay, I think it comes down to people's questions and things now. Shall we just see who won at the end?
Let's do it.
If you can bear to watch this.
The compare.
It's an awful man.
Combated by someone who is every inch your peer, and to do so with the eloquence and conviction of our two debaters. So please join me in a round.
32 voted for the motion. 32 voted for the motion, and 68 voted against. Oof. So how was it at the start?
I think it was, there was like 65 was unknown or something like that. I can't remember.
Let's see if he mentions it.
Mobile events such as this.
Bad religion.
Combated by someone who is every inch your peer, and to do so with the eloquence and conviction of our two debaters. So please join me in a round of appreciation.
I think it's a Hitchens win, isn't it? From what I can, I think more people are against now than were at the start.
I think so too. But like I said, I feel like Blair wasn't even there to debate. Hitchens actually had a very poor start, but then managed to get some really nice zingers off in that first debate. But again, his I would describe Hitchens' debate style as very almost like a boxer or whatever. It's just about laying down those blows, taking stuff from memory, destroying, undermining. It's all about like counter swings and counter punches. That's where he gets the kind of best attacks. Tony Blair, his kind of like this kind of big vision, again, more of that kind of emotional argument, lots of utilitarian stuff as part of it. But again, you know, really should have attacked all of the cracks in Hitchens's story. So,
I mean, he was there to schmooze. Let's face it. There was no way Tony Blair was in town just for that debate. He was there for his clandestine ends, I'm sure. In fact, if you go back, you'd probably find there was a Davos meeting in Toronto something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they get huge amounts of cash from this kind of stuff. The speaking, I mean, if you look at the background of the Munch guys, you know, it's very interesting as well. So, you know, lots of money and connections as well.
Okay, yeah. And I mean, let's not forget that Christopher Hitchens was an ally of Blair in the press on the Iraq War as well. Mm. So they were probably buddies already. Anyway, Coney says, I've watched this debate before. I seem to remember Hitchens had better rhetorical tricks up his sleeve than Blair. Hitchens is a battle-hardened debater and polemicist. Blair is not. Well, the thing is, though, Blair was very good at the PMQs. So Blair, when he wants to, can absolutely batter opponents. He frequently did well at the dispatch box. So, you know, I mean, famously, Blair did cut PMQ short. It used to be like an hour and he cut it to half an hour, I seem to remember. And I think it stayed half an hour ever since. But Blair was a good debater when he wanted to be. But here, as we've talked about, it's like he didn't even turn up to fight, didn't even have any interest in having the debate, really. He wanted to, you know, get people to join his foundation.
Because that's like, I feel like he didn't really want to attack secularism because he knew that the elites are secular by nature. So do you see what I'm saying? So it's kind of like he's not going to smack talk his audience, and that's why he was so non-aggressive about it. He was always positive from his side, and again, just trying to constantly seed those messages out. So, but like, he's trying to win certain people over to his way of controlling other people in the world. So.
Yes, the eunuch says, the failing of men like Hitchens is one of blind hubris. From a privileged elite high IQ ivory tower, he might think himself above God or us plebs, can be like all like him. He isn't, and we can't. From his cloud, he only sees the failings of great men who are on their ascent to grandeur. What he doesn't see is the beneficence of the divine order and the natural order. So profound super chats from Yez the eunuch there.
The thing is, again, it'd be interesting to see like how Hitchens would have turned out, but I feel like he would have inevitably gone like Dawkins down this like rabbit hole of like irrationalism, ultimately, where again he's just so PC and so woke that he has to abandon ideas of rationalism, because and then science itself is about abandoning core ideas about reality, certainly biological reality. I'm sure that he would have backed that up as well. And so I'm just not sure how he would have turned out. I think he would have dyed his hair and gone to Portland or something.
Yeah, I think he would have ended up much like Dawkins as well, who basically lost his mind over Brexit, as you remember. Coca-Cola says, the Dark Lord Institute is to faith what the William and Mindy Fence Foundation is to medicine and education. The name, i.e. brand, change from faith to global change, tells you all you need to know. Absolutely, Coca-Cola. And this is why I'm saying you've got to keep an eye on pure Machiavellian operators like Blair, you know, who's basically been building his network of tens, I guess, ever since he was involved with politics, going back to the early 90s. And at this point, he's been at it, what, 30 years, 40 years, 40 years of network building like this. And, you know, you've got to understand what we're up against here. It's huge. And this NGO grift network that we've talked about is really the center of the pods. It's a very, very strong attack node of the pods anyway.
But it's interesting because it's filled with all, you know, on UO, you were talking about those kind of international people, the Google types or whatever, and it's just filled with people like that. That's their kind of layer of elite. I mean, for me, I think the only ray of hope is, you know, that video you sent around of that Labour woman trying to sue Belarus.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I'm just hoping that the next generation is just so retarded that, you know, that's the level of elite they actually have access to.
Yeah, but I actually wonder whether the Labour MPs are so low quality now because the politicians aren't really needed anymore.
Mm, that's true.
Because all of like, the, you know, if you control Google and you control every single NGO and you control the world religions, who cares about who the MP for Henley is or whatever?
Yeah, certainly. Maybe if you've got your kind of inner cabal of like people who are in charge, and then you've got just who's that like? Is it? There's that like 20-year-old random Labour woman who's constantly on Twitter just talking absolute rubbish, yeah. And it's just obviously it's like you haven't lived your life, you know, you haven't even worked at McDonald's, you haven't worked a day in your life, and you're telling other people how to live theirs. So you know, I'm amazed that they get through, but maybe you're right, they're just kind of like additional appendages of the beast.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like, who do you think will get more? Who do you think's got more power? You know, a local Ember Labour constituency MP, or somebody who controls one of these NGOs?
Yeah, 100% the NGOs, obviously. And like you said, the tech, and even now probably international organizations have even more power as well, like especially if they're tied up with investment. So,
I mean, I don't know. Blair's probably got operatives within the Vatican, you know, at this point. Chris Primer, you know, I don't know. I've never looked into it. I'd love to know what the relationship between the Pope and Blair is, for example, because they're back, like, through his Faith Foundation, he's bound to have sought meetings with people high up in the Catholic Church. Must have. Mm. Chris Primer says, didn't Hitchin support the Iraq War? To the sulfur mines, I say. He did support the Iraq War, famously. Hugh James says, Christopher Hitchin's fighting organized religion. Peter Hitchin's fighting against e-scooters. I'm an atheist, and I was too young to get into Chris. Yeah, I mean, Peter Hitchin's does pick some rather strange battles.
No, the e-scooter fight is a just cause. It's the true crusade. Again, there's more genuineness and authority in the way that he speaks about e-scooters than his brother does about religion, in my opinion. So,
what I like about Peter Hitchens is that he's a kind of master at fighting lost causes. You know?
That's true.
The clocks, famously. Some British summertime. Harrison Wade says, I'm on a train right now. Choo-choo. Jakanda Plus says, I know you dislike anime. However, I think you would like Jinro, the Wolf Brigade. It is devoid of the usual anime tropes. Can you please stop trying? Jakanda Plus, Poe the Person, anyone else, I'm never going to watch your degenerate filth. Chris Lucio says, AA, what is Blair's education? He must be highly trained to be able to do all that he does. I think he went to one of those elite schools up in Scotland, I seem to remember, and also went to university up there.
No, I thought he was at Oxbridge. I thought he did the, what do they call it? The
PPE.
Yeah, PPE, yeah. He's one of your lot.
Tony Blair, he went to Fettes College, and then he went to St. John's College in Oxford and became a barrister. So there you go. Yeah, born in Edinburgh.
Oxbridge scum.
So there you go. then Jedi Knight Anakin Cringewalker says, Hitchens' argument makes sense in a pre-2014 world. Listening back, I just don't care about the problem of evil anymore. Most people deserve it. Nathan C.J. Hood says, for a religious person to take part in this debate, they must concede the liberals' framing of what constitutes a force for good in the world. That's basically right. And I mean, of course, Blair was the perfect opponent for that in terms of the framing. I mean,
he conceded so much ground. You know, was there anything left? Even if he won, would there have been anything left?
I mean, is anyone, if that was the defense of religion in 2010, is it any wonder we've seen? Sulla says, is perennialism essentially pantheism with extra steps? What's pantheism then?
Pagan religion.
Pantheism with extra steps?
No. Like, it is definitely different, and there's more connotations. Like, Carlyle is never, he never doesn't talk about his pantheon of gods or whatever. It's maybe closest to deism, I guess.
In the way that both Carlyle and Evelyn talk about it, they're basically just saying that there is a divine order of things and a sacred truth that is not really for our understanding. It's kind of beyond comprehension and cuts across cultures. So, okay, you may have a Buddhist and, you know, comes out in this form, or you may have a Muslim and it comes out in that form. But ultimately, whether it's Frederick the Great, Charlemagne, Cromwell, Muhammad, they're all ultimately grasping towards the same eternal truth. So it's kind of non-doctrinal in that way. And the other thing is that the kind of genuine spiritualism, I guess you'd call it, comes from within you yourself. You're not going to get it through an exoteric church or anything like that. I mean, Evola would say some people might, but it's for the trucks. The aristocrats is not going to find it that way. they're going to find it in their own esoteric way. I mean, Carlyle never really goes that far, but more or less what he's getting at as well. But if you ask me, it really comes down to the fact that these are very idiosyncratic individuals who are a little bit like me and never going to join a club. You know, they're just going to do their own thing. And yet they still feel this, you know, great chain of being, I guess.
I was wondering whether you're going to create your own cult after the pagan stream, you know.
No.
Get the AA acolytes going in honor of your name.
I don't think I'll be becoming a pagan anytime soon. I do wonder about whether the church ultimately is a good. I mean, I'll leave it there. I'll just leave it there. Ishbosheth, because it can be subverted by Tony Blair, whereas your inner faith can't be. If you have an inner resolve, become a man of the steel. And a man of kind of spiritual, divine, eternal faith, you can't be subverted by Tony Blair or a priest or anyone else.
Well, I'm not sure about that. And all I'd say to that is, you know, you've had 1,500 years of non-subversion. You know, surely it's not necessarily the religious structure. It's something else that's gone on in the meantime. You know, what happened in the 1850s to 1890s that started all of this?
Ishbosheth says, too many sham captains. I was born and raised in Toronto and went to that monk debate on refugees. Farage won. The crowd is core midwit. Everyone in Canada is a blue church NPC. Dollface says, do secularists not have responsibility for the spread of AIDS due to non-monogamy, promiscuity, and homosexuality that most religion is against? I mean, you know, if he really wanted to go in for shots, he could have been like, I don't think it was religion that caused the spread of AIDS in New York in 1982.
See, that's it. Exactly. That is the kind of spicy, like, assault that you need to do. Like, when you're going up against Hitchens, you just need to, like, punch him back in the face rhetorically, don't you say?
Yeah. So let's carry on. Well, there's quite a few of these. Okay. Cringewalker. Yes, Christopher. If women have no kids, you will have fewer poor people. You will also have fewer people. In fact, you'll have none. Household Dog. Yeah, I mean, if you take the logic all the way. Yeah. Household Dog says, if there is Satan, there is God. By simply turning up, Blair won the debate. Household Dog says, the atheists were the first victims of modern social justice. Of course they were. What was it called? Atheism Plus or whatever. One, he says, in fact, many of those SJWs were from those atheist circles, weren't they? And the original anti-SJWs were from atheist circles too.
It's interesting, yeah, because again, that like it's both the most prominent leaders of, you know, SJWism. And yeah, like you said, and some detractors. Although I think it's definitely more weighted to the pro side for sure. But they're definitely at the forefront of the thinking, and that it's almost like the ideas evolved. It's interesting to kind of chart the different groups etymologically. But there is like a clear evolutionary path that they went down, which was faster than the normal path. Let's just say.
Well, he says, be it resolved that anime is a force for good. No, Winter Phoenix Forest Corinne says, anime is the holy banner of the future. No, it's not. It will turn you into a femboy. Cringewalker says, funny thing is, Protestantism doesn't believe your works earn you heaven. So you do them because they are good, not for a reward. Yeah, I mean, Blair could have pointed that out, obviously, but being a Catholic, I guess he wouldn't. But also, he was so wishy-washy. He was just talked about faith in general, basically. Yeah. So he was very, very.
I think he'd be careful not to like positively talk about one religion over another.
Yeah, he was extremely careful to be just so universalist and indistinct. But you know, we've talked about why he was there. Why not? He says, "Let's train birds and bears to not mark territory." Chris Lucio says, audience is literally boomers who hate their parents and want to sin without any judgment. Absolutely correct. Adam Hobbs says, Juvenile Moise didn't want needlecraft for Haiti. No. AHC says, 1 million plus march against, but we Blair Bear don't care. War Tony Matinee Sunday. Prove pretend power doesn't matter to anyone, people. So that there we go. Bitcoin Mining says, the problem is definitions. Grieg.gilbert10@gmail.com will explain things you need to understand. And Coney says, scientists call England's July the 19th lockdown easing a dangerous and unethical experiment. Easing, not the lockdowns themselves, utter madness. So there we go.
I think there's been one last minute one, has there?
Yes. Shay Ragnarsson says, Blair weren't there to debate. He was there to tell the great and good who paid to see that BS how it is. So there we go. Yes, I would agree with that. Anything you would like to shill, Pharaoh?
Yes. On my personal YouTube channel, we've been going through the life of Salvador Dali and done the first part last week. We're hoping to do the next part next week. And also, as ever, there's another Foundations podcast episode coming up this probably Saturday. And we'll be going to be going through some high Victorian and arts and crafts architecture. So lots of great content to check out. Please like and subscribe my channel.
Yeah, and I've seen you. I think you've got over 1,000 subs now, so you can get yourself monetized.
Yes. Finally. Yes, thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Do subscribe to Pharaoh. He makes some good stuff. I do know that Dee was upset he wasn't on the Dali stream. He was like, I know everything there is to know about Dali.
I know. It's tragic. Maybe next time.
Yeah, I'm going to do, I think this time next week, I'm going to have Dion to do Andy Warhol. He wants to do a Warhol stream.
That's great. He knows more about Warhol than a Warhol biographer, I would say. So the perfect choice.
Excellent. In terms of my shilling, if you join this stream late, I did make a video that came out just before it, which was called 10 Things to Hate About Tory Boys. We'll let that speak for itself, but I haven't looked at the reaction to that yet. But Yiz, if you haven't seen 10 Things to Hate About Tory Boys yet, you should definitely watch that because I think you'll enjoy it. And the other thing, obviously, Foundations of Rhetoric would be a good one to get if you enjoyed us breaking down this debate. The whole Trivium, of course, would be good. Foundations of Economics and all the other courses on the academic agency, yours now for very small fees. And if you're interested in becoming my apprentice, send me an email. All right.
What's the email address for it?
If you could, right, the first test is finding that out. If you can't find that out, what hope have you got? All right. Bye, everyone. Get out.